Welcome to Transformers, the podcast about how business people and policymakers are creating a sustainable future. I'm your host, Kai Embren.
My guest today is Aidan Sharon, Director and Plastic Initiatives for the EarthDay.org. Among other things, Aidan has a Bachelor of Science in Biology from the University of North Carolina. Aidan has been a dedicated environmentalist. He joined Earth Day in 2020, helping shape the End Plastic campaign, and became Plastic Game Director in 2023. The theme of the Earth Day in 2024 is Planet versus Plastics. The plastic disasters is an urgent issue that affects every aspect of our lives. Our food, our oceans, rivers and forests. We all must take a stand. What can we do to stop this disaster? Earth Day has developed a comprehensive set of actions that empower each of us to make a difference. And your participation is crucial. So, welcome, Aidan, in Washington.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, great to have you here. So, can you tell the listener about the Earth Day's organization's overall mission and the vision, and also a little bit about the achievements?
Yeah, so EarthDay.org's mission is to diversify, educate, and activate the environmental movement worldwide. We were started in 1970 by Dennis Hayes, our founder, and we went global in 1990. Some of our accomplishments were pushing the environmental movement in the United States for the Clean Air and Clean Waters Act, as well as the establishment of the EPA. We also have been really successful in our climate education program, as well as education around plastics today. I've been working on the program for about 2 years, and we've seen a big amplification of the information around plastic and a lot more attention grabbing of the plastic problem.
And global acting organization, that means also that you are all over the world?
Yeah, so originally we started out as a kind of a mobilization and teach-ins within the United States with 10% of the U.S. population at the time in 1970. And now we see about 3 billion people every year kind of come out for Earth Day on April 22nd, or usually around April 22nd, not on the exact date. But we still appreciate it. And we like to celebrate Earth Day every day, as we say.
But when we look into the specific goals and targets for EarthDay.org,
yeah, we're calling for a 60% reduction of plastic production by 2040. We see this as pretty achievable as well as a palatable goal. A lot of people don't realize that a lot of plastic is single use. So 50% of all plastic is single use packaging. Is single use. And then 50% of that 50% is packaging. And a lot of this packaging is unnecessary. And the things that are single use typically do not have to be. Such as water bottles, plastic containers for food. A lot of the time we see fruit now that's wrapped in plastic packaging that's completely unnecessary, as well as just the common items that you see wrapped around silverware that's not necessary, and then the kind of paper bags that we see commonly in grocery stores.
Which is the biggest challenge for you to reach this type of target?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge we are currently up against is just the massive amount of money that the petrochemical industry has. It's hard to combat that and kind of convince them to start moving away from how profitable plastics are. So plastic is mainly made up of oil and petroleum. 99% of all plastic is made up of petroleum. And the issue with that is as we move away from fossil fuels as a actual fuel source, so as we move away from them powering our cars and powering our homes, the industry doesn't want to lose out on those profit margins, so they're going to transition it away from the fuel source to the plastic source. And we're expected to see at least a tripling of production by 2060 if things don't start happening today. And we're hoping that the industry and the consumers realize, look, like we can't keep going down this path. Because if we continue down this path, it's going to start driving up emissions from the plastics industry on top of the emissions that are being released because of, you know, global fuel sources. And I think the estimate that came out today was by 2040, plastics will account for 1/5 of all global carbon emissions if some production cuts are not made.
How do you see the opportunity to engage this type of a polluter to change their behavior?
I think what they just need to recognize and what we need our government officials and regulators to do is kind of enforce a polluters pay principle. So the people producing or the producers pay principle is the people producing it have to pay for more than just the product extraction and the product selling. There's a lot of hidden costs when it comes to plastics. So plastics in the United States account for $250 billion on healthcare costs alone. That's not including the waste management costs that are associated with it. And that's an annual process. So while plastics may seem cheap up front, and they are cheap up front, they are just burdening the taxpayers and burdening the common people after the fact. And that's something that we want to move away from. It's something that needs to be put and drilled into people's heads. Like, it's not our fault that plastics is everywhere. It's time we made these producers pay for what they're doing.
It's such a policy on the polluter pay principles.
Yeah, I think that's the way we need to start moving. It's not fair that, you know, somebody that's working a minimum wage job is ending up having to pay for the results of a billionaire, you know, industry owner that's just pumping out massive amounts of chemicals and massive amount of harm while profiting all the way.
If we go into the sort of the global policies on the government side, and we see that United Nations approved the landmark to create the world's first ever global plastic pollution treaty in 2022. How do you see the role of the UN to drive this change?
Plastics do not know boundaries. They don't know state borders. They don't know country borders. They're not just going to stay in one place. So it's up to all of the countries and everybody around the world to kind of come together and kind of put an end to it. And where the UN can play a role is making sure that this treaty fully encompasses the full life cycle of plastics. So not just, you know, the downstream parts of it where we're just worrying about pollution as a, you know, macro plastic. So those bottles you see on the ground, we're not going to see a lot of progress if we just worry about recycling. What we need is kind of, you know, upstream policy solutions. So that means production cuts, that means better monitoring, that means limiting the amount of chemicals that are going into plastic that will allow for recycling to actually become feasible and possible. The reason plastic can't be recycled today is there's over 16,000 different chemicals that can go into plastic. 4,200 of them are claimed toxic, and only 6% are monitored. So we just need to start calling, and countries need to come together to decide what's acceptable. And then hopefully at the end of 2024, we do have at least the start of a treaty. We have the INC meetings coming up. We have INC 4 coming up in Ottawa, Canada at the start of next week, so Earth Day. And then we have one more meeting at the end of the year taking place in South Korea. At the end of the meeting in South Korea, we hope to have a, you know, draft agreement that's signable that we can put out there, and then the process would go into conference of parties, similar to what we did with the Montreal protocols, similar to what we do with the Basel Convention, and then similar to what we do with the climate change emissions process.
When you look at out in the world and see, is it anyone that you can call for first movers over the national governments? Where do you find the first movers?
So I think some of the first movers, and it's not, you know, people tend to not think about these countries as African countries. So Rwanda has been leading the way on reducing plastic for over 20 years now. They called for some of the first single-use plastic bans, some of the first plastic bans. Other countries like Kenya. I visited Kenya for INC 3 back in November, and it was incredible how clean their national parks were because they banned plastic from being able to even enter the park. As soon as I walked in the park, I had a water bottle that wasn't refillable, unfortunately, and they made me keep it at the ranger station until I completed my hike.
Well, when we look at Europe and Asia.
Yeah, Europe is, the EU in general is doing pretty well. They've been implementing different processes and different regulations around plastic, especially in terms of pollution and the way it enters our waste streams. Where the EU does fall, and like the EU is a bunch of different countries. So they're not going to have complete agreement on everything, obviously. Some of the issues we do see come out of the EU is certain EU countries do allow for the incineration of plastic, and that is one of the most pertinent ways that plastic pollution can enter into our airways, as well as just adding to the triple planetary. In Asia, there are countries that are doing their best to combat plastic pollution. Unfortunately, a lot of the Pacific Island countries in East Asia are the ones facing the full blunt force of the plastic problem, because it's floating in our oceans and then ending up on their shores. The Philippines have done a good job at trying to cut back on the amount of pollution hitting their borders. China has put a ban on the import of plastic waste from the United States as recycling. Africa has done similar things as well. And then India has started to implement single-use plastic bans. That just, the issue is enforcing those plastic bans can be extremely difficult. You need, you know, all the governments and all the governments within the country to kind of come together and, you know, start working towards that process. But where you find issues is not all governments are going to be willing to cooperate as well as you're going to have citizens that just don't want to, you know, follow those rules, and it can be extremely difficult. And we know it's an extremely difficult process, and it's not going to be solved overnight. So it's just a means of figuring out where the best regulations work. In the United States, we have issues with it as well. We've tried to implement bag bans across the country, and now we're starting to see some states pushing back, saying, you know, we have preemptive bans on bag bans now, meaning that some states can't even go through their local legislators and be like, look, we don't want to see plastic bags in our grocery stores. Unfortunately, some states have said, well, you have to allow the grocery stores to put plastic in there. And it's just a lack of understanding of how dangerous this product is.
Which role can Earth Day play to make more pressure on national governments to implement a global legal binding agreement by the end of 2024?
So yeah, a large part of our role is just education and just pushing the messaging out there that plastics is dangerous. And then we also work with other organizations that are more qualified to speak with UN delegates about what they want the public to know about what's happening and the best kind of information that we need to be putting out there. The biggest way to get our governments to change is just have the citizens push them. Unfortunately, that could be kind of difficult in some parts of the world, but in the United States, at least, we do get the opportunity to speak with our State Department that's leading the negotiations, as well as our executive branch, who's not the best on environmental issues, but better than previous administrations. So they are a little bit more open. And then we also are on the ground at these meetings, kind of talking with delegates, asking them what is feasible, what we want to see come out of this final treaty. And those delegates come from all over the world. I talked with a government delegate from South America at the last meeting just because he needed a cab ride to the negotiation meetings, and his Uber wasn't arriving and mine just happened to be coming in at the same time. So I was basically able to corner him in the cab and give him my 10-minute spiel, which he wasn't super appreciative of. Yeah. But I've also, you know, followed delegates out of the bathroom, let's say, or followed government delegates in lines and just kind of cornered them. Not cornered them. They're allowed to leave, whatever. But just been like, look, this is what we want to see come out of this treaty as a civil society member and a member of a community that's going to be facing some of the blunt force of the plastic problem. I need you to do something for us. I need you to stand up for your people, and I need you to stand up for your citizens.
Maybe you have an extra opportunity in 2024 when you have a lot of elections all around the world, and more than 80 countries, more than half of the world's population have election 2024.
I did not know that. That's incredible.
How can Earth Day help voters to raise questions to candidates about their view on important policies and actions?
If you just go to our website, earthday.org, and kind of look into the plastics problem, we have a Babies versus Plastic report that came out in November of 2023 that highlights a lot of the health issues around plastic, especially in babies and children. Unfortunately, babies and children are some of the most susceptible to plastic pollution and the plastic additive chemicals. We've seen increased cancer rates of up to 20% in some areas due to exposure to certain chemicals in childhood cancer rates. So it's just a matter of educating yourself and then just staying up to date on the information that's constantly coming out. What we've seen is there's a gap between the scientific reports that are coming out and then the general public. So we only hear about the good news around plastic rather than the bad news. And we don't always try to be doom and gloom, but it's part of what's going to drive governments is just saying, look, here are the major issues. And, you know, Earth Day is kind of acting as that microphone to say, these are the major issues that we need to be worrying about. Here are some ways that you can talk to your delegates in or your government representatives in these ways. Mm. And just, you know, demand to know what their thoughts are on plastic. Just ask them directly, like, hey, what do you see as the largest environmental issues of our time? Is it the biodiversity crisis? Is it the climate crisis? Is it the pollution crisis? And then you'd be like, oh, well, actually, plastic encompasses all three of those crises.
Oh,
so,
it would be interesting to see if the candidate will take care about this message in the coming elections.
Yeah, it can be a little difficult. Some are more willing to speak on it than others, just depending on where they're coming from and what their voter base looks like. It's understandable. They can be caught up, and they a lot of the times don't want to be caught up or say something by mistake that wasn't pre-approved, but it's our job to, the government's there to work for its people. So it's our job to demand answers to our questions.
But if you look, we look into the Earth Day theme of planet versus plastic and what the corporate world could do and also what the investors can do to be change makers.
The corporate and the investor's role is to, you know, invest in different areas and invest in different areas that can either move us away from plastic or figure out how to make us safer plastic. What we don't want to see come out of this treaty is a move to bioplastics that we think are generally safer, and then 10 years down the road find out they're just as bad. So we just need some, you know, research and development into the best solutions to these problems. We also need financial mechanisms to fund certain areas and certain areas that are the hardest hit by the production of plastic and the waste that comes from plastic. We need an uplifting of everybody, and that might just come for investments directly into communities rather than investments into different corporations. And then I know some corporations are really trying to cut down on their plastic. It's just, we also need investors to start spending money and putting money towards those companies that are willing to make changes. So whether it's, you know, reducing the amount of plastic packaging they use and switching to a more recyclable material such as cardboard, or even just focusing more on, you know, bottle deposit schemes and bottle deposit returns and just going back to some of the older ways we used to do things. It wasn't that long ago that some of the largest, you know, beverage producers in the world were taking back their bottles, sterilizing, refilling them, and then shipping them back out. And then you could go to the store, return it for a small deposit, and there you go. You had reusable bottles all over the world. But they saw the profit margins switch. They saw the profitability of plastic. So they decided that they could make the change without anybody really noticing, but there's a big change coming, and it looks like people are starting to wake up to it. And so we just need those investors to start calling on companies to maybe look backwards to move forward.
But it's interesting to know that it's only 20 companies are responsible for producing over 50% of the throwaway single-use plastic that end up as waste. So it should be a possibility to get into dialogues here in this field. But bigger problems could be also, what do we do about the existing landfills?
We just need to figure out a better system. I think what needs to come first is reducing our dependency on plastic, because plastic is one of the largest parts of the things entering land streams, and they're just not biodegradable. And then we just need to figure out, and that's where the development and the investments come in the better disposal methods. We do not have a good disposal method currently. Advanced recycling is not the way to go. Incinerating the waste is not the way to go. We need scientists, we need tech companies to come out with a solution to the problem. And whether that's, you know, thinking about making a more recyclable plastic, or even just going backwards, like I said, to those glass, to those reusable schemes.
If we look at your educational effort, can you explore a little bit more about the brand audit?
Yeah, so the brand audit is just a way to kind of hold companies accountable, not in an aggressive way or in a like, hey, you're doing a terrible thing, but just to call attention to it. A lot of companies don't respond to harsh criticism, but if we start showing them, look, your product is the main problem in this area, we're calling on you to come up with a solution. We don't want to shame you, but if we have to shame you, we will. So, you know, discovering, I'm not going to name a company today, but let's say one of the largest producers of plastic in the world that also happens to be a beverage company, one of the largest beverage companies in the world, is the one that we're finding on the side of a riverbank. We can go to that company, or we can go to, you know, the regulators of waste in our countries and just be like, this problem needs to be solved. This is a huge issue. If you are the ones putting the most waste out there into our system, you need to be the one to come up with a solution as well, or at least help us come up with a solution.
But how has this brand audit been used?
Personally, we have not used a brand audit yet. We've just started, we've kicked off the program recently. We've been using it in our Great Global Cleanup program. So that's our volunteer cleanup program. And it's a way for us to monitor where all the waste is coming from. We have seen success from other organizations in using brand audits to sue companies. Letitia James, New York State Attorney General's office, back in November, successfully sued PepsiCo Frito-Lay for the amount of plastic and plastic waste they found washed up on the banks near Buffalo, New York. And that's kind of the catalyst that started that lawsuit, was the brand audits that were gathered by that New York State Attorney General's office. And it was just a way to hold, you know, PepsiCo and Frito Company responsible for their waste.
So is it something that we will see more of from your organization to use in the work?
We hope so. We hope to add it just a way to both educate people and also just to get more involved and just kind of holding more companies responsible.
But if we then go into the relationship to other stakeholders and collaboration, it's a various numbers of stakeholders involving in the work you're doing. Anything of success stories we can learn from when it's related to stakeholders?
We've been really successful working with the environmental justice community. So kind of getting that message out there, as well as getting the message out there from waste pickers, informal waste pickers especially. I've spoken with informal waste pickers at the past couple negotiating meetings for the Global Plastics Treaty, and they've asked us to kind of be a microphone for them, especially in the United States, where we don't realize how prevalent of a job it is, and they are the ones kind of handling the most amount of waste, they're facing the most amount of health implications, and they have no formal representation at these meetings or within their own governments. So it's, in my eyes, it's not a success story yet per se, but we're really trying our hardest to make sure that their message gets out there and that they're represented adequately in these negotiating meetings as well as within society. Well, so some of the roles of the different stakeholders. So we have the environmental justice communities needs to call out the government bodies on their environmental justice implications, such as polluting our waters and polluting our waste. We need the different stakeholders from the religious community to call on their congregations to start worrying about our planet and start pulling together resources and start educating their congregations on the dangers of plastic. Most religions are trying to protect our planet, and the way we're going to do that is moving away from plastic. other stakeholders such as the youth communities becoming really fired up around the plastic issue because they see it as part of the triple planetary crisis, and they want different ways to get involved. And different ways they can get involved is, you know, going out, meeting with their local legislators, or going out and holding a mobilization or a protest to say enough is enough. We need you to start doing something about this plastic issue. Those are just a couple examples. I mean, we have stakeholders all over the globe that are doing their own kind of sort of protests in certain ways. We have the fast fashion industry as part of it coming out, and we want them to realize that they're also contributing to the plastic issue with their microfibers. Yeah, we work with Plastic Pollution Coalition really frequently on getting the messaging out there, and then we also work alongside organizations like Center for International Environmental Law during these negotiating meetings, and I rely on them pretty heavily. I have them almost on speed dial to ask them questions about, like, what is the best way to format this argument to a delegate? What is the best lawyer-ease way to talk about this problem without, you know, sounding like I normally do, which is kind of, I talk in layman terms, and I don't want to do that when speaking with delegates. So what is the best way to frame this argument? Or what is the best, what did that delegate say in that intervention that I can take and translate to the general public? What is the breakdown of that statement?
Your agenda seems to be full activities and action on the way to come. But I'm very impressed about the catalog of policies and practical actions that Earth Day can deliver, and hope that Earth Day 24 will be something more for politicians and also businesses and NGOs around the planet to help you to drive this needed change. What is the organization's vision for a plastic-free future? And how do you plan to continue your role beyond Earth Day 2024?
We're just going to continue working on this plastics treaty issue up through 2024 and then beyond when it goes into Conference of Parties, and then just also heavy focus on different national legislation that we can do. In the United States, for example, we have the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act that we're trying to push pretty hard in the best ways we can, as well as the Plastic Pellet Free Waters Act that we're hoping will get introduced to our Congress soon and can go pass through, where it will prevent the dumping of plastic pellets into our waterways, which are kind of the starting base for plastic. We also just are calling for more transparency throughout. So we're calling on our, you know, Environmental Protective Agency to focus more on the PFAS issue, which we're grateful they have started doing, but we still know it's not enough and there's still a long ways to go. So unfortunately, this is a problem we're going to be dealing with for quite a while. So we do have our work cut out for us.
It has been great to talk to you, Aidan, and to have you as a guest in and change maker in Transform. So hope we're going to see a lot of activities first on the 22nd of April this year, but also the time to come. Thank you very much, Aidan.
Sharon. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm Kai Embren. Follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn, where I will be announcing the future guests to this podcast. And you can expect about 2 programs a month. And each guest has a unique story of making business and society sustainable. So find out more. Visit my homepage, kaiembren.org. Thank you for listening.